This episode of the Art of Manliness podcast is brought to you by the Art of Manliness store. Yes, we have a store where you can buy AOM swag. We've got t-shirts, we've got some posters, some really one-of-a-kind posters, like a poster that has Rudyard Kipling's poem If on it, Teddy Roosevelt's Man in the Arena. We've got some prints. We just released one called A Little Fellow Follows Me. It's a poem that's about being a dad. It's great. Anyways, go check it out, store.artofmanliness.com. See all the other stuff we have there. And if you use the code podcast10 at checkout, you'll get 10% off your first order with us. Again, that's store.artofmanliness.com, code podcast10 at checkout for 10% off. Brett McKay here, and welcome to another edition of the Art of Manliness podcast. So a few months ago, we had a guest on the show. Her name is Frances Cole Jones. She's the author of the book, How to Wow, Proven Strategies for Selling Your Brilliant Self in Any Situation. Great podcast. If you haven't listened to it yet, go check it out. It's podcast number 164. And Frances, she makes her living coaching high-level executives and other media personalities on how to put their best foot forward in business situations, or if they're going to be on TV or on the radio. And we got a lot of great feedback on that show. She provided a lot of great tips on job interviews, negotiations, social skills, small talk, etc. She got into that. And at the end of the show, she invited our listeners to go to her website, where she has a form where you can ask her any question when it comes to personal presentation in your professional or personal life. So, you know, how to make small talk, what should you wear to a job interview, how do you prepare for a job interview, things like that. And she was flooded with questions, and she said, she emailed me back, she said, I got a lot of great questions, and I thought it would be, you know what, this would be a great idea for you to bring Frances back onto the show to answer some of these questions that you all asked her, because I figure if one guy had that question, there's probably, you know, two or three dozen other guys who have that same question. So we're going to make this a regular thing. She got a lot. We were only able to cover a few in this episode. I'm going to call it Ask Frances, and we're going to answer some of the questions you asked her several months ago. So today, the themes we hit on today are how to deal with difficult conversations or power struggles in the workplace, how to deal when you're having small talk and you feel like the conversation's lagging, or maybe you throw something out there and it just sort of bombs and like everyone just is silent. How do you deal with that situation? And then we also talk about how to deal with those things you might be self-conscious about that whenever you're interacting with others. So if you have a stutter, how do you handle that with grace and charm? What do you do if you feel like you're too tall? We also talk about specific things you can do to be more charismatic in both your professional and personal life. Great episode. And again, after the show, check out the show notes. You can find that at aom.is/Jones. And you can also visit her site at francescolejones.com, where you can ask her another question. So we can bring that up the next time we do this. So without further ado, Frances Cole Jones on basically being your best self in whatever situation you find yourself in. Frances Cole Jones, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
So we had you on a few months ago to talk about your book, How to Wow. It's all about presentation in the workplace, your personal life, so you give your best possible impression. And at the end of the show, first off, the show was well received. We got a lot of great feedback from it. But at the end of the show, you invited our listeners to go to your website, and you have a place where they can submit questions about any topic about presentation, charisma, body language, professional dress, etc. And you were just overwhelmed with the amount of questions and awesome questions that AOM podcast listeners had for you. And we thought it'd be fun, you and I discussed this, to bring you back every now and then, because you had so many questions about a wide variety of topics, to bring you back and discuss some of these questions. I think if one or two of these listeners had that question, there's probably thousands or hundreds that have the same question. So that's what we're going to do. I think we'll have you on every quarter or so to discuss about how to wow and the specifics of it.
Thank you. Yeah, no, I agree. I loved all the questions that I got, and I really do. I put that proposal out all the time, but it's a testament to your listeners that they took me up on it, because they did, and all the questions do roll to my phone, and I do answer every single one of them. It might take me a little bit, but I do, and it's one of the great, great pleasures and privileges of what I do.
That's great. So there was some common themes that came up, and we'll hit on a few of them today and some of the specific questions about these common themes. And one common theme was charisma and how to access charisma. But before we get to the specific questions about charisma, because the one question that happened over and over again was many people believe you're either born with charisma or you aren't. Is this true?
No.
And if right, no. And then so it's something you can cultivate it. And if so, how? But before we answer that question, how do you define charisma? Like, what are we shooting for?
To me, charisma is that quality that makes you say, "Ooh, I'm so happy I'm going to be seeing so and so," or "Wow, I'm really, I'm completely engrossed in this conversation." And it has nothing to do with looks, and it has nothing to do with your bank account, and it has nothing to do with what you're wearing. It's just that quality of passion and curiosity. It's kind of a mix of the two things.
So, okay, if you're not born with it, mm-hmm. How do you cultivate it?
Well, there are a few things that you can do. I mean, one of the things, first of all, I just want to say, because people do say, "Oh, but I've been told I don't have any charisma." Maybe you don't have it. Maybe you haven't accessed it yet, but let's definitely say yet, because it is possible for everyone. I think that if you're giving a presentation, the way to make yourself charismatic is to say to yourself, "Why do I have to tell this story? Like, what about it is so desperately important to me?" But that needs to be added into, why does my audience have to hear this? Why is hearing this going to make their life better? And what happens is, very often when people do presentations, they're very good with the front end. They're very clear on why I have to tell this story, but they're less clear on why their audience has to hear it. That piece of, really, truly, this will make your life better, and I'm going to tell you how. So there's that piece of it for presentations. And then I think it's always really good to explain, how did it transform my life? Because what that does is it gets you into a storytelling mode. And storytelling is so much more interesting than what's known in my business as useless modifiers. Like, it's just really great. It's amazing. It's incredible. Nothing happens in my brain. So how did it transform your life, and how will it transform your listener's life? So those are two things to think about with presentations. In terms of just one-on-one encounters, if you're feeling nervous about it, a great trick that I use a lot is, imagine that your person you're meeting is a reporter. And say to yourself, okay, what three words, if I were going to read an article about myself after this meeting, what three words would I want the reporter to use to describe me? Would I want that person to say that I'm curious, or I'm passionate, or I'm sympathetic, or whatever it might be? But pick three attributes that you really want to embody while you're speaking to them. And what's nice about that is it really does give you a focus for staying present for the person you're speaking to.
So yeah, I think you talked about in the last podcast we had, is like, part of charisma is just being fully present with the person.
And listening, people listen kind of one of two ways. They listen to either interrupt or they listen to, to interject their own story. So they either want to negate or they want to turn the conversation back to them. But I think when you're really listening to somebody, you're asking them things like, how did that make you feel? And wow, that sounds like it's something that was really hard for you. And the person you're talking to is like, oh my God, you're right. It was really hard for me. And all of a sudden, again, they leave that encounter and they're like, oh my goodness, so-and-so is so charismatic. So.
Is there anything with your body language that you can convey that you are present? Because everyone talks about Bill Clinton. He has this sort of magic ability to make that one person in the room feel like they're the only person in the room.
I think this comes back to eye communication. And, you know, which again is above and beyond eye contact, which is just, you know, kind of not at all the same thing. But it's really staying with that person and keeping, you know, because, you know, you've been at different parties and had different encounters. Well, the person is kind of talking to you and kind of looking over your shoulder to see if someone more interesting is walking in the room. So it is that person who just stays with you and really, you know, looks, you know, into your eyes. And one of the things that I talk about, there is a school of thought that says that when you really want to persuade somebody about something, then you look into their left eye as you're talking. That is the way that you can persuade them of whatever it is.
What's going on there? Why the left eye?
Well, you know, it can be a people, you might have to, you know, roll with this a little bit because some people think this is kooky, but you know, there is a school of thought in that the right side of your body is fire and the left side of your body is water. This is the whole yin-yang thing. It's an Ayurvedic thing. So if you're looking into somebody's left eye, you're looking into that softer, more fluid, more accepting and receptive part. The opposite is true. You know, when you're finished being persuasive, and you just need them to do whatever it is that you need them to do, if you want to command somebody about something, look into their right eye. Now, you know, there are a lot of people who are listening to this and thinking, you know, she's completely off her rocker.
Right.
And, you know, and I get that. And so I guess the only thing I can do is I can invite you to see if it works for you. Certainly it's a trick that are a tool, let's say, that I use all the time. And it also, it just is really helpful in terms of keeping you focused. If you're looking with both of your eyes at their left eye, you're going to stay with them. You're going to stay present in a very different way.
Yeah, I can see that being useful in that way. Like just for that, just like it helps, it gives you something to focus on.
Right.
Instead of wandering around your eyes. But yeah, so I'm going to challenge AOM listeners right now. Like,
check it out.
Go out and do the left eye thing and write Francis a note. Saying this is completely kooky, Francis, or hey, Francis, it worked. And yeah, tweet it out to me because I'd like to hear the responses as well. All right. So yeah, accessing charisma is like getting that passionate why and being able to articulate it.
Passion and curiosity.
Passion and curiosity and just being fully and completely present with the person, whether if it's just one-on-one or even when you're giving a presentation to a larger group.
Yes.
Okay. So there you go. Accessing charisma. So another theme that came up with the questions you received was how to have difficult conversations, both professionally and in your personal life, whether it's your children or spouse, etc. So one question was kind of the personal life side is how do you stay out of the he said, she said conversations that often pop up?
I think, I mean, again, this is personal life and with friends and in the workplace. First thing I want you to do, if it is once you finish a conversation, you know, write that person a note. I know it sounds crazy, but the minute you get it in an email and say, you know, as we discussed this afternoon, X is going to be happening. You know, I will be handling Y, you will be handling Z, whatever it might be. You've got to have a paper trail. It's critical, particularly in your workplace, because if you don't have that paper trail, then everybody, again, can go back to like, no, that's not how I remember it. and that doesn't help you at all. The other thing that is really important with he said, she said, is not to get into a feelings-based conversation. It really needs to be a fact-based conversation. So if someone's, you know, if you're talking to somebody, but when you do that, I feel like this and this and whatever it might be. No. Don't want any part of that. At that point, what I recommend you say is, I think the most important piece for me right now is to get clarity on your expectations of me. You're not having, you know, you want no part of how they feel about anybody else. It's just, what does this person expect from you in this moment that you can now achieve? The other thing, you know, and again, not so much in a one-on-one encounter, but if you are in a workplace situation with your boss, or at a lunch or anything like that, the minute that you take out a notebook and you start writing down what people are saying, people get very focused on, look, this is actually what I want to say, rather than meandering down some kind of crazy feelings-based emotional turmoil situation. So a notebook is super useful. And again, one of the other places that I highly recommend having your notebook in hand is anytime you're dealing with a doctor or a doctor's appointment for yourself or anyone else, because it's so very easy to, you know, be overwhelmed with emotion and not be listening and not be present. So just make sure you have that.
Okay. And I mean, so let's say you're doing a phone call, mm-hmm. right? And you want to make the person aware. Like, you don't want to say, I'm recording this conversation, because that just like puts them,
right?
You know, like they get defensive.
Sure.
But you still want to let them understand that you're going to follow up with them, right? So you can avoid those. Like, how, what would be sort of a clean way of doing that?
So I think a lot of it's going to come down to tone. So you have to, in the most upbeat way imaginable, say, I love what you're saying and I think it's so important. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take notes while we're talking. And then I'm going to type up my understanding of what we discussed and I'm going to send that on over to you.
Perfect. I like that. So you can avoid that whole thing. Well, you said this on the phone. And then it also takes out, you know, reduces the risk of being like misunderstanding that can happen over the telephone, right? Someone
right.
says something with a tone and it might not actually mean what the tone conveyed.
Yes.
So no, it allows them to correct themselves or clarify.
Yeah. And people, again, people do, the minute you say, you know, I'm going, it's not may I, you're not asking permission. I'm going to be taking some notes while we talk because this is really important. You want to give them the because behind why you're doing it. You know, not because I don't trust you or because you always say one thing and do another, because this is so important. I'm going to be taking some notes while we're talking.
Awesome. Well, let's say, you have this conversation and there's some misunderstanding and you need to go back and clean up that misunderstood conversation. So how do you double back to an earlier conversation that you might have had and say, look, I thought there was some static here. Can we revisit this without it being awkward, I guess?
I mean, I think that you want to always say, you know, I feel like, take the onus on yourself. I feel like there was some misunderstanding around our earlier conversation. I'm just not completely clear. So what I'd like to do is double back into it and make sure that I, again, really understand your expectations of me and also know that you have clarity on what I'm going to be doing going forward. But always take the onus for any kind of mishmash on yourself.
Yeah, don't say, well, you were unclear.
Yeah, that always ends poorly.
Right. So I think one of the things that makes difficult conversations difficult is the emotion that's right. in the situation, or perceived emotion that's in the situation. Because I found with difficult conversations, like I'm the one who's thinking that there's a lot of emotion and tension there, and the other person like is completely oblivious to that tension or emotion. So what are some good ways of taking out the emotion of difficult conversations?
I think what usually happens is that people get really focused on what they want, and they either don't articulate or you just don't happen to know the why behind why they want it. So what you really need to do is get underneath the what. So, and there are a few ways to do that. So someone's like, I have to do this on this day. Okay. You know, what I'd like to do is I'd like to hear a little bit more about what's important to you. So, I mean, the few questions that I always ask in that moment is, you know, can we unpack that a little bit? Can you tell me a little bit more about why this is important? Because I want to make sure I understand. Or can we dig underneath this? You know, I can hear that it's important. I've taken that in, but I really want to learn a little bit more about why it's important. Because what that does is that sometimes underneath the demand, the what, people actually feel much more similarly than you might imagine. So it's getting underneath that initial, like, kind of the power struggle or the demand for something. The other thing that I think is can be really helpful in those moments is to say, you know, I need this, or this needs to happen. Okay, well, what would that look like for you? Because you can think that you know, it's such a silly example, but, you know, someone can say, I need you to do the laundry. Okay, so to one person, that means, you know, you separate the lights and the darks and you put it on cold or you do it, or whatever it might be. And the other person's like, I'm just getting it done. I'm heaving everything in the washing machine. So people end up with very different results in those moments. So asking, what is it going to look like for you? Or, you know, having this happen, what is this going to provide for you? Because sometimes when we know what it's going to provide for somebody, we're like, oh, okay, I get it that it's important. You don't seem as unreasonable anymore. So those are a couple of good questions.
And then what do you do after you get those answers? Let's say you ask the why and you understand where they're coming from, but still you're like, I can't jive with that. It's just like, cause there's competing interest or just not congruent.
I think, again, you did better saying to them, like, I get why this is important to you, and I understand the rationale for your request, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask you to, you know, show me the same courtesy and understand why I'm coming at it from the place that I'm coming at it and why this, you know, this is as important to me. Because, again, sometimes they haven't even begun to tune in to the why behind why you're making the quest, and or maybe you didn't spell it out that clearly.
Okay.
So
that makes sense. So another common theme was social anxiety, just being uncomfortable in social situations, whether it's one-on-one conversation, let's say at a party or on a date or doing a job interview. Because, I mean, that's a social situation that can produce a peak anxiety because you're on the spotlight. So let's talk about just general conversation. One question an AOM listener asked you, or what are three ways to stay in a conversation you feel is flagging?
Well, there are a couple of different things that I always like to do. I think that you can always say, you know, I'd love to get your opinion on this. Because I don't know anybody who doesn't love to give their opinion about something. So if you feel like a conversation is flagging, say, you know, this has been so interesting so far, but I'd like to know a little bit more. I'd like to get your opinion. The other thing is that when they're in the middle of their story, if you just keep saying, frankly, and then what happened? And then what happened? Or the other, my favorite is, can you tell me more about that? You know, because people will follow that lead in an almost, it's a fascinating thing to do. What I hear more often than that, though, is that people will say, oh my God, you know, this morning I was having such a nervous breakdown about blah, blah, blah. And the person listening will be like, oh my God, me too. I was having the worst morning. Okay, well, this is not a conversation. So, wow, can you tell me more about that? And then what happened? What did that look like? And all of those kinds of things. Just lead them on a little bit and really try and get into some of the nitty gritty. It will be more interesting for you.
In any other ways? I mean, I think it's a great one. Let's say, like, it's feeling like, how do you interject, like, besides asking what's your opinion, like, let's say you want to bring up a new topic. What's a good way of transitioning to a new topic?
Well, I think that you want to pick a topic that hopefully, again, is as interesting to them as it is to you. So, I mean, I understand it's always way more fun to talk about ourselves. I get that. But it doesn't make for a great conversation. So I think that it's one of those moments that you can say, you know, tell me a little bit about what you do, you know, in your free time. Because, you know, here's some of the things I like to do, but I'd love to learn more about, you know, you look like you're very fit. You obviously work out, whatever that might be. taking clues from where you are, how you know them, who introduced the two of you. That's always like when people are introducing, you know, we are being introduced to someone. Or if you meet people at a party, so how do you know the host? I promise you, they will go on for half an hour about the very first time they met.
Yeah. No, and I love the question, like what you do in your free time, because, right. You know, typically the go-to thing that I go to is like, so what do you do? And right. By that, I mean, like, what do you do for a living? And it's kind of boring. I think a lot of people, when they're at a party, they're like, okay, last thing I want to talk about is work. But I love that question. Like, what do you do in your free time?
Right.
That's a great one. Very cool. All right. So there's some ways to keep the conversation going is ask their opinion on something and then keep asking and then what and then what and then ask them questions about how they might know the host or what they do in the free time.
Right. And the other thing that I think just another note about introducing people to each other, because I don't know if you've ever had this experience, but very often I'll know someone who is introducing me to someone else. And they'll say, oh my God, Francis, this is Brett. You're going to love him. All right.
Okay, I don't love
Brett. Where to go with that. Like, I'm sure I will love you. But don't, you know, that's tough. Because it sets the two people up. Like,
a lot of pressure.
For nothing. So again, I think it's always really helpful if you're introducing people to each other to say, you know, this is so-and-so, this is so-and-so, and this is why I think the two of you are going to have a great time talking.
We're going to take a quick break for your word from our sponsors. All right, if you shave every day, especially with those multi-blade cartridges you get from the drugstore, you know that shaving can get really expensive really fast. Plus, my experience with those blades is that they chew up your face. I got a lot of razor burn with them. That's the problem that Harry's solves. It's a company that ships razor blades directly to your door, so you no longer have to go to the drugstore and ask the manager to get the key to get those expensive blades out of the case. Go right to your door, and because they ship direct to the consumer, you can get these blades for almost like half the cost of the blades at the drugstore. Also, the blades shave nicely. They make their blades in a factory in Germany. I've shaved with it. I haven't had any problems with razor burn at all with it. If you want to try Harry's out at a discount, I got an offer for you. They've got their $15 starter kit, but you can take $5 off by using promo code manliness at checkout. So go to harrys.com. They'll give you $5 off if you type in code manliness with your first purchase. That's harrys.com. Coupon code manliness at checkout for $5 off the starter set and start shaving smarter today. Also by Scentbird. So how many times do you spend $80, $90, $100 or more on a bottle of cologne only to get tired of it long before the bottle's empty? Or you found something at the store that smelled great, but when you brought it home, you're like, doesn't smell as great as I thought it did. What a waste. Enter Scentbird. Scentbird drops a 30-day supply of top designer brand cologne into your hands every month for only $14.95. So you get to try things out. And if you get tired of it at 30 days, well, you're not left with a big giant bottle of cologne that cost you $80. You're only out $14.95. But this is where Scentbird gets better. They make finding a scent a breeze. You go there. It's like the Netflix of colognes. You enter in your sort of style preference, why you want to wear your cologne, and they're going to present scents or colognes to you that fit that profile. It's all based on an algorithm. Pretty cool. I was able to use it and found some great smelling colognes. If you want to try this out, got an offer for you. Try Scentbird for yourself. Listeners of the show get an extra 25% off their first month selection. So you take 25% off $14.95. That means you're going to spend about $11 for a month's supply of designer cologne. Just go to scentbird.com/manliness to get that 25% off discount. Again, that's scentbird.com/manliness. And now back to the show.
So what do you do? You're in a conversation with someone and you put out a thought, a fact, or a conversation starter that goes over like a lead balloon. I think we've all had that happen. We throw something out there and they're just sort of like, man, it's like the uncomfortable silence. So what do you do in those situations?
I think the most important thing is to keep a sense of humor about it. Because what you don't want to do is end up, killing the conversation, and then B, making other people do the cleanup for you. So I think it's one of these moments that you can say, oh, you know what, I guess that really wasn't as interesting as I thought it was going to be. Which is very different than saying, well, I guess I'm the only one who finds that interesting.
Okay. Right.
Now you've alienated everybody. So, you know, or you could say, wow, you know, now that I heard that out loud, it's really not as funny as it was when it was inside my brain. Again, which just, it's a lighthearted way of letting everybody off the hook.
Gotcha. So use some self-deprecating humor.
Mm-hmm.
A bit. Have some humility. Okay. So going back to job interviews, one listener asked, how can people cope with anxiety in job interviews?
One of the things, and it sounds incredibly pedantic, but one of the things I want everybody to do is to pick three small talk topics before an interview. Because, I mean, there are all these, you know, please prepare for the hard questions. But what we don't, you know, what we don't prepare for is that, you know, space of time while you're walking down the hall with somebody. Or, wow, we've just had a great interview and you're standing by the elevator waiting and you pick a topic out of thin air and the whole thing blows up in your face. So I really want you to have three small talk topics in your back pocket before any kind of interview. And they can be as small as, wow, are there any restaurants nearby that you would recommend? You know, that kind of thing.
Right. You want to stay away from things like politics, probably.
Yeah. And don't, I mean, if they've hung their diploma on the wall of their office, by all means, feel free to comment on that. But I don't recommend getting anywhere near like family photos or anything, because people don't tend to update those
right
as frequently. And or they might have had a terrible fight with their spouse that morning or with their kid. And then they like tell you the entire story. And then they're horrified afterward that they overshared.
Okay.
So yeah, stay away from the family photo.
Stay away from the family. But sort of keep it on pleasantries. Mm-hmm. Restaurant, food, sports, maybe, mm-hmm. movies. Okay.
All those kinds of things.
Three things there. Okay. That'll help with the anxiety. I mean, anything else besides that? I mean, is there any things right before you go into the interview? Is there any sort of, I don't know, mindset things you can do to help prepare yourself to kind of take off the edge?
I mean, I think that I want you to have done an obscene amount of research ahead of time, not in a creepy way. You know, not like, wow, I was looking at the pictures of you in seventh grade. That's going to, you know, depress everybody and make you seem like a stalker. But to say, you know, you went to X school, that is incredibly impressive. I saw that. Or, wow, I saw that your company does, you know, this philanthropic outreach. And I was so impressed by that. So again, it's really letting them know that you have done more than prepare to talk about yourself.
Right.
It's demonstrating that you're prepared to talk about them.
Right. Because a lot of part of the job interview is not so much to suss out your qualifications. They usually do that through the resume. They can see your mm-hmm. GPA, your curriculum vitae. They just want to know, like, are they going to get along with you?
They do.
Because they're going to spend, like, because you spend most of your time with the people you work with. I mean, you probably spend more time with them than your family. So they want to make sure.
Yeah. For those of you who've, like, I don't know if anybody's read the Tina Fey book, Bossy Pants, but one of the things when she was talking about being the head writer at Saturday Night Live, one of the things they talked about is this somebody that I want to see in the break room at 3 o'clock in the morning? Because we're going to be there together.
Right.
So
yeah, it's about if you're gonna get along. I remember I was reading this book by this one guy. He was interviewing for a job at like a high-end investment firm. And there were a ton of other like qualified people. Like it was hyper competitive. But he happened to see that the interviewing manager or executive had a Washington Redskins trash can in his office. And he just says, oh, you're a Redskins fan. And like the entire interview was about the Washington Redskins and how they've done poorly, and they're hoping that, you know, this season will turn it around. And he ended up getting the job out, you know, beating out these other more qualified individuals. And it came down to, he's like, I think the guy he liked me better.
Right. And what's so great about the way that he phrased that is, I see that you're a Washington Redskins fan, because sometimes people say, but I don't care about sports. So how am I going to be able? No, well, again, I'm going to go back to it. Nobody cares about what you care about. People care about what they care about. So demonstrating that you're paying attention is honestly really most of the time all that anybody needs to find you charismatic.
Right. Yeah, I remember when I was in law school, I had this interview for a summer internship in a big firm here in downtown Tulsa. And the guy saw that I speak Spanish fluently, and we just had a conversation in Spanish. Like, that was it. And just about where we were from, like, where'd you learn Spanish? And I ended up getting the job. But it was like, we didn't talk about the law at all, because I think he saw that I was qualified. I had the grades or whatever, but he just wanted to see, can I get along with this guy? Can I have fun with him?
Yeah. Is this someone I want to see at 2 o'clock in the morning?
All right. That's the thing. So yeah, remember, you're going in there to see if they want to spend 2 o'clock in the morning with you. So another common theme, and this is the last one we'll hit for today. But just people dealing with perceived insecurities about maybe a physical insecurity they might have, or perhaps just their background insecurity they might have, and how to deal with these. So one question is how can someone cope with a stutter?
Yes. That was a question that I got. And, you know, it's so interesting that I have a very close friend who is an author. And he has a stutter, and yet he does book readings all the time. And one of the ways that he handles it that I think is so graceful is before he starts to read, he just says, as you can hear, I have a stutter. I've had it since I was a child. I just want you to know that, you know, it resolves itself. So if you wait patiently, everything will move along. But it's just about he brings it up and he lets them know how they can participate in making things comfortable. So it's beautifully done. And at the end of the day, again, everybody's, you know, anything that they might have around it just falls away because he has just handled it. So that to me is the most graceful thing that I've seen anybody do. It's, you know, it comes back to one of the things I talk about a lot is if you can't fix it, feature it, you know, bring it up, don't pretend it's not happening. It's happening. So let me talk about it.
Right. Okay. That's great. Yeah. Don't try to hide the elephant in the room.
Right.
Basically. Okay. And that can go with like any other type of, perceived, insecurity.
Right.
Or that's obvious to other people, and just putting people at ease to say, okay, here's this thing and there it is. And that's that. And move on. Okay.
Go ahead. If you're comfortable with it, they'll be comfortable with it.
Right.
So, yeah.
Right. So another perceived physical problem or insecurity that people have is what to do about feeling too tall. And I guess the corollary to this would be like what to do if you feel like you're too short.
Yes. So I think, you know, one of the too tall, it's just, you know, some people struggle with this. And I think it's just a matter of if you feel like you're looming, just take a half step back or, you know, is just to give people, you know, particularly if you're a larger man, to give, you know, women a little bit more personal space only because we are like, we're smaller and it can be, you know, like it can feel a little bit threatening. So just that half step back or to lean forward, to lean in, to shake your hand, and then you can come, you know, quite tall. But that said, there's a school of thought, and I find tallness incredibly reassuring and attractive. So I think that I didn't know in this instance if this was just something this gentleman was bringing to the party, or if he had actually had people, you know, comment on how tall he was. So it is, it's that two-way street of I need you to be comfortable with it. And if you sense others aren't, just, you know, mention what's happening. Wow, I feel like I'm really, you know, looming over the gathering.
Right.
So, yes.
So, yeah, if you show that you're comfortable with it, other people are going to be comfortable with it as well.
Yes.
What about, like, if you feel like you're too short?
Again, I think it's one of these moments where you need to look at what you are bringing into the room. Because it's possible that, you know, no one else is thinking about your height. But if you walk in with all of that stuff, and I mean, and there's a reason why they call it the Napoleonic complex, if then now again, everyone is having to make you feel comfortable. So that's not fun for them. So it's a matter of doing the work yourself. Okay, I recognize that often I feel like I'm far shorter than everybody else. You know, again, for women, you can just put on some higher heels. For men, it's harder. So I think it's just a matter of working through that, you know, talking to people you know and feel comfortable mentioning it to about, like, how do I read for you? Like, when you first met me, was it the first thing that you thought? Because often, you know, other people aren't as aware of it as you might be. And frankly, most people aren't thinking as much about you as you are. So it can be really helpful to say to people, you know, was it one of the first things you thought about with me?
Right. So yeah, oftentimes people aren't even thinking about the thing that you think they're thinking about, our own worst enemies. And, you know, you're going back to that idea about it's hard for men if you're shorter and like kind of altering your appearance, right? Women can put on high heels. There's a great website that I'd recommend people go check out. It's called The Modest Man. It's written by this guy named Brock. He has style tips and advice for shorter men out there. And it's all about dressing in a way that it makes you appear taller.
Right.
And just, you know, and also he just has a lot of great advice on dealing with some of those insecurities that shorter men might have.
What a great resource.
Yeah, it's called The Modest Man. So go check that out if that's an insecurity or perceived problem you have. So the other, I thought this was kind of funny, the question, because I'm sure this has happened, because I've seen it happen like in school, on the first day of school when the teacher's going through the roll. And it's, one of the questions was, how can I put people at ease with my unpronounceable last name?
Right. I think, again, it's one of these moments where if you demonstrate that you're aware that your last name is kind of kooky, you're going to put them at ease. So, you know, it really depends on the people that you're with. If it's a kind of a fun-loving group and you want to say, you know, my last name is blah, 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 and maybe we can all say it together, you know, that can work. But if these are people that like to feel smart or superior to you, then they're not going to go for that one. So I think in those moments, what I recommend is, you know, I know my last name is a bear to pronounce. And it's pronounced, say your name, and then say the origin of it is X. Because what you've done here is you've made them feel comfortable because you've told them how to pronounce your last name. And by telling them the origin, you've made them feel smarter. So now they can go out in the world and they can either inform or reprimand, depending on their personality, other people who don't know how to pronounce it.
And in the process, you've been charismatic because you made the person feel better about themselves, which is the thing about charisma. Okay. Well, that's some great advice there. Well, Francis, these are the big themes we hit today and some of the questions we got. But where can people go and ask more questions so we can do this again sometime?
My website is my name, francescolejones.com. And Francis is with an E and not an I. And there is, when you get there, an ask a question button. And as I mentioned, all the questions roll to my phone. So please, you know, feel free to ask me about anything and everything. I am happy to handle work thing. Work things is really my wheelhouse. So anything that's going on with your boss or with your coworkers, and job interviews. I love a good job interview question. And just, you know, the day-to-day encounter can be fun.
Great. Well, Francis Cole Jones, thank you so much for your time. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
My guest today was Francis Cole Jones. She's the author of the book, How to Wow. You can find that on Amazon.com. Also, check out her website, francescolejones.com, and go to her Ask Her Question tab where you can send her a question. It goes right to her iPhone. Ask her anything about personal, you know, just your personal or professional presentation, whether you have a job interview question, whether you have, you know, a question about small talk or how you should dress for certain situations, ask it to her and maybe we'll bring it up in a future episode.
Well, that wraps up another edition of the Art of Manliness podcast. For more manly tips and advice, make sure to check out the Art of Manliness website at artofmanliness.com. And if you enjoy this podcast, I'd appreciate it if you give us a review on iTunes or Stitcher, as that helps spread the word about the show. As always, I appreciate your continued support. And until next time, this is Brett McKay telling you to stay manly.